As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Lights out! And away we ayo! No Breaks is back! I'm your host, Trey Kirby. I'm joined today by our local F1 expert and a man who is closely tracking the dwindling buffalo herds of the 19th century, Graydon Gordy. And Graydon, what's up, dude?
How's it going? I'm so excited to be here in the Classic Factory. From the outside, as you drive up, you'd never know this is a factory for classics. But then you come inside, you see all the machinery, you see everybody at work producing the classics. It's incredible.
Classics just flying out the windows here. Gosh. Of course, we've got our team principal in the paddock, JD, making sure we're up to snuff on the latest rules and regulations.
Hello, everybody.
Great to see a car podcast in a garage.
That's perfect.
It was meant to be. It was meant to be. Whether you're joining us live in the Slipstream team here on YouTube, listening to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or through the Athletic app, thanks for joining us for season two of No Breaks. You think it's going to be as good as season one?
I think it's going to be even better.
Even better?
I mean, we're in every possible way. We're up in the ante. We're going faster, using even less breaks than we did last time. We had almost no breaks.
Yeah, we had almost no breaks last year, but we took a couple of them. Super dramatic season last year. Weekly skirmishes. Lots of fun. We'll see how it stacks up, but we'll be here every week after the races to break down what happened on the track, what happened off the track. So get your subscriptions right. Right now we're in the No Dunks feed. I think we're going to launch another one here in not too long. But before we get to the 2022 season, we got to talk a little bit about last year. Netflix just dropped season 4 of Drive to Survive, recapping the 2021 season. You watch it yet?
I am almost done with it. Normally I watch it almost in one sitting, but as these guys know, like, I have like two infants at home, so
busy?
My ability on, to man. Just sit down and watch TV for like 8 hours in a row or something is maybe not what it quite was. Maybe it was 6-7 months ago. So, you know, I'm really enjoying it so far though.
Yeah, I think I've watched through episode 6, which is the Williams episode,
yeah,
I think.
I'm in the same spot, actually.
And honestly, I'm kind of dreading watching the last two episodes because I know it's going to get dramatic. I know I'm going to get a little bit heated. My blood pressure is going to be rising. But
we already got the Haas episode, though, yeah, which is always the best episode of Drive to Survive, in my opinion.
Like, hilarious episode.
Gunter Steiner is the star of the show. I mean, I would watch a whole documentary just about him and his whole season.
I think he probably has my favorite line so far from what I've seen when they're talking about Nikita Mazepin's dad, who came in and saved Haas, and he's obviously got ties as a Russian oligarch. But Steiner mentions, he's like, he's not an oligarch. He's just a fertilizer guy. A simple fertilizer guy.
He's a classic yard man. He's my yard guy.
One of the biggest stories last year was that Max Verstappen wasn't going to be doing like the talking head interviews for this, which he's not in season 4. Do you miss him?
I'm impressed how much it's not impacting the storyline. First of all, his absence is made up for by Christian Horner's constant presence and incredible willingness to talk about anything all the time. That helps because he kind of is the stand-in for the Red Bull narrative. And in a way that I don't know that Christian Horner is terribly likable in this,
no.
but he is probably a more dynamic villain than Max would be. I think he's good on camera, even if you come away from a lot of these kind of maybe more annoyed with him than many people even were last year. So
yeah, definitely. I think he's like he's great to have on the mic, and it's kind of like, you know, there's no Verstappen there, so I'm gonna take two times. Take my villainy to the next level two good. Times. It almost feels a little bit like this season is Toto versus Christian Horner to me. I mean, obviously, with no Verstappen around, so he's not going to be able to be speaking for himself. They still kind of work him in there with, you know, like radio calls or like a post-race interview, that kind of thing. But I don't know, like... It's just very funny to see the way these two guys go at each other.
The
Toto
look into their lives is incredible. Like, Toto Wolff, like, ordering more and more elaborate breakfasts or, like, wearing, like, the... Or, like, Christian Horner doing increasingly, like, foppish country gentrified things, you know, like skeet shooting but having someone else load his gun for him and things like that, right? It's all these things that are just incredible little, like, highly staged but very funny looks in their lives, because... Somebody had to say, you know, what do you want to be thought of as? And he's like, well, I'd like to be somebody who is portrayed ordering breakfast multiple times in this. You know,
it's for breakfast.
Yeah, it's very, I think it's great, but I'm really liking it. I feel like the show is kind of getting some hate from, like, maybe diehard F1 folks, like old guard people who were into it before the show came around, before all the new kids showed up, but I honestly still think it's super fun.
Why is it getting hate?
I think there's a little bit of, like, they think it oversimplifies the sport. It doesn't really cover any of the engineering or like the car dynamic side of things. Like, you really don't get a good sense of, like, why what happens on track happens. It's very personality driven, right? And I think people wish there was a little bit more of that. And I think that's maybe a fair critique. They could balance in maybe a little bit of education around strategy and, you know, the development of the cars and things like that. And then there is also the criticism that they mischaracterize people some, but I don't really care or buy that. Like, it's fine. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like, it's, they're making storylines. It's interesting. It's compelling. I don't know. They're not, certainly, like, Horner is, let's say they're making a villain out of Horner. It's like, he's playing into that.
Oh yeah, he's not like he's a villain.
Yeah, like, he's not like, what, you? How could you portray me this way? It's like,
It's almost like with Horner. I'm going to give you all of the villainy stuff. You choose what you want. There, it doesn't feel like there's much left on the cutting room floor for Christian Horner.
No.
And also, I'll say, I have never seen somebody so dedicated to pumpernickel toast.
Oh yeah,
as Toto Wolff is. Oh, he's ordering a pumpernickel at breakfast every single time.
He loves it. I
pump it up.
I noted that, and I guess I like pumpernickel just fine.
Same,
but not nearly at the frequency that he's enjoying it.
I can't remember the last time I ordered a pumpernickel toast at breakfast. But we got together for the Monaco Grand Prix. Last year,
we did.
You gotta have pumpernickel toast.
Okay, fair.
It's
okay,
gotta
fair.
Be like
our annual Monaco Grand Prix brunch. I will provide some pumpernickel. I will do Drive to Survive themed, you know, brunch items.
I love it. A lot of ginger for ginger spice, perhaps. You know, walking through the beautiful fields with Christian Horner.
Just a natural, casual. Yeah, just happened to stumble upon this video crew as we were going about our afternoon stroll in our English manner.
Yeah.
It's a hard life.
It's great. I can't wait to finish it. I can't wait to get upset again going down to those last couple of races. Yeah. I mean, like, I was watching the McLaren episode, I think. It's the first time you see the collision that sends Verstappen going over Lewis Hamilton.
In Italy,
it's weird where they're just kind of like, oh, yeah, that happened. But, you know, it's going to come up later as, like, a bigger storyline later in the season. But when you're only talking about McLaren, you're like, oh, just a small little crash there. Anyways, that's 2021. We're on to 2022. Got a bunch of new driver lineups here. So we're going to run through all of the teams kind of starting at the top. Mercedes did win the Constructors' Championship last year.
They did.
That's weird to me, considering that Max Verstappen won the Drivers' Championship. But we're starting with Red Bull because they do have the champ. Is it more prestigious to win the Drivers' Championship? Like, does a team like Red Bull, are they upset that they didn't win the Constructors' Championship because they don't get, like, that huge payout for being the number one team, even though their guy won, which is more glory, I would say?
I think it kind of Right. So I think the payout is the key here. I think if you're a lower team that's a little bit more financially insecure, that those spots, you know, you're not really competing for the top title, but those spots are more meaningful than any given driver finishing. But I actually think Red Bull, I mean, they clearly at some point optimized their strategy for winning the drivers' championship. Mm-hmm. And I do think among fans, it's what's most remembered. Like, definitely, people talk about Hamilton's championships, Schumacher's championships, et cetera, Senna's championships, way more than they talk about Ferrari or Williams or McLaren or whatever. Of course, there's incredible prestige with the constructors' championships. I'm not saying there's not, but I feel like the drivers' titles are the things that teams that are financially capable will optimize for.
Yeah.
If the millions here or there aren't a make or break thing for you.
Red Bull and Mercedes aren't going broke coming in second is what you're
saying.
Same
with Ferrari. I think they don't care. Like, that's not what they want to be. They want their driver on the top step.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. Anyways, so the drivers for Red Bull, they got the same old crew. Max Verstappen, Sergio Perez. You think they're going to be the favorites coming in?
I think they're probably the favorites. Yeah, I think Max probably has to be the favorite to win again, especially after how things looked in practice. In these sessions in Bahrain and back in Barcelona, the car looks good. It looks fast. It looks like they've done a reasonably good job with the new regulations. And you probably got to think that Perez takes another leap. Everybody, you'd think they take a leap, but everybody's comfort with the car is going to be a little off because it's such a dramatic change. But another year, more ingrained into the culture, you know, better working relationship with his engineers and everybody in the team. I think that you got to expect that they'll be the favorite.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Especially, like, you just saw how it kind of clicked into focus as a team, especially like in the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Like, Verstappen being able to make his comeback and win was due in large part to Perez holding off Hamilton for that little bit of time there, giving Max a chance to catch up. That was great stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I would, one other question I have about Red Bull for you. They're making their own engine this year, right?
Yeah, they are, although it's not in name only, but, you know, they've transitioned. The Honda is exiting the sport, but basically the Honda F1 team and factory are transitioning over to Red Bull, and even some of the personnel are staying. So there's a lot of cooperation there. So it's true, but it's not as if it's like, okay, they started from scratch,
sure,
and they don't have, you know, and now they've had to just cook up an engine from nowhere. It's basically the Honda engine that they were running last year with the sort of gains that you would make in the off season.
Throw an RB on there and it's all good is what
you're
telling me.
That's basically what I'm saying.
All right. In our second team, Mercedes, they got Lewis Hamilton.
They do.
Ever heard of him? Pretty good. And joining Lewis Hamilton this year in Hamilton's quest for his eighth driver's championship, George Russell moving from Williams.
Mr. Saturday.
Taking the number two spot from Valtteri Bottas. What are your expectations for George Russell this year?
You know, I definitely think he's going to win a race. I definitely think he's going to win a race. I think he's got the pure pace and he puts it together enough on a weekend to win a race. I think he'll be on some podiums. A lot of this is going to be impacted by the car itself. You know, Mercedes doesn't sound very confident about their car right now. Lewis Hamilton is claiming they're not going to compete to win races. They've said that every year after year. I saw some tweet the other day where it was just screenshots of Lewis Hamilton saying in 2016, 2017, 2018, every year, like, oh, the car's not ready. We've got tons of problems to figure out. Then the first race comes around and they just like crush.
Oh, we figured it out.
Yeah, like, whoops, we figured it out in the last week, I guess. And now, so it's uncertain whether they're sandbagging or not. At the same time, they took such a dramatically different design approach to some of the other teams that I think that it's possible that they made a mistake. I mean, it is possible they made a mistake. So I think that we'll see. And that being said, I'd expect them to be very competitive. I expect George to do well. You know, I think it makes their life easy because George one day is going to want to compete for titles, but this year it's pretty easy to say, listen, you're the number two, you know, and you've got to support Lewis, while you kind of get your sea legs under you to compete at the very top of the grid.
Do you think he'll end up being a better number two for Hamilton than Valtteri was? I mean, they had a ton of success. Obviously, Mercedes did. It was just the criticisms of Bottas were always that he's finishing second, guaranteed. You know, he's not going to beat Hamilton. Even those couple of seasons where it would come in like, is this the year? It wasn't.
To be honest, I think he won't be a better number two in the sense that he's better than Bottas, in my opinion, and at times will be less willing to sacrifice, less willing to not be competitive with his teammate. He's going to want to win titles, and Bottas wanted to as well, but at the end of the day, I think by the middle of every season, Valtteri acknowledged the reality of what was going on and was willing to play ball. You know, multiple times acquiesced to team orders, you know, in general played a supporting role and did so well. And with that, they won, you know, the driver and constructor titles several times in a row as a pair. So in some sense, you couldn't have asked for a better number two. So in that, Russell will be better in the sense that I think it gives them a better shot at securing the constructor's title, as I think Russell will generally perform better than Bottas will, but at times it will get complicated and messy if they end up, you know, if Russell doesn't feel like playing ball there.
Sure.
Which he may not.
Well, and I think Mercedes, if you're in their shoes, you have to be hoping that they have like a Spurs-like sort of thing here, right? Where like Tim Duncan passing the secrets down to Kawhi Leonard. Obviously, that didn't end well. Sorry, buddy.
Let's hope that.
Sorry, buddy.
Let's hope that's not.
They did get the late
Mercedes
title, though.
Is hoping.
They did get the late title, so they did. You know, there are worse people to learn under than Lewis Hamilton.
100%. 100%. And I think that, but Lewis is famous for, I think, having tense relationships with teammates when they do really start to challenge him. I mean, his relationship with Nico Rosberg, you know, in the, you know, early to mid-teens was as toxic as any relationship on the grid because Rosberg was pushing him and actually did take away a title from him one year, right? So I think that, so if you see Russell overperform, I could see something a bit like what happened with Vettel and Leclerc and Ferrari, where things are maybe quietly a little bit more tense than anybody wants to let on. I don't know. But that's all speculative. I think in actuality, you won't end up see that coming to pass because Lewis will be clearly and confidently ahead of him, and it won't be a debate, other than some maybe one or two on-track incidents where there's some individual moment where maybe they ask Russell to do something he doesn't want to do or something like that.
There's some good teammate moments for Russell
In
Drive to Survive Season 4, helping out Latifi to get his points during the season. I hope the same thing doesn't happen to us, though. Like, if I start making really great Formula 1 observations,
and then I start undermining them.
Very jealous of my sweet takes.
Yeah, and I start, like, talking about
how, you know, Skeets is in here hosting instead.
Oh, my God.
I got to go host for Toro Rosso.
And then just put out to pasture. Yeah, then I'm just like some. Okay, in your defense, right. Russell does some. They do talk about that instance where he basically is defending on behalf of Latifi and, like, is totally focused on Latifi getting points so the team can get points. I think that's was an awesome moment from him. And I assure you there will be those moments in the Merc too. I just think there will also be moments where he's very competitive against Lewis and that will feel complicated. You know, it's not that he's not a team player.
Just
and he loves Toto and Toto loves him. And, you know, so.
All right. Our next team on the list, your team, kind of, Ferrari. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're a Ferrari fan here. They got their same drivers back as well. Charles Leclerc, Carlos Sainz. They mentioned a lot in Drive to Survive Season 4. Ferrari is not here to come in third place. They did last year. It was a great season. What's a great season for Ferrari this year? The title?
I'm going to say it right now. This is a place where if you're a team in red, you know, we like to say that you're back. And for me, I think that Ferrari is back. I'm back and I wear red and I'm all out of red clothes. I'm back. They're back. I think they're going to be right at the top. I think they're going to be competing for wins. I think they're going to be back on the top step. I think it's Ferrari can consider it a good season if they're back in second place or they win Grand Prix, which it's been, you know, a minute.
2019, I think, was the last race win for Ferrari.
So if they're winning Grand Prix, I think you feel great about that. If they're second in the championship, I think you feel good. However, they right now look like the team that is best positioned to challenge Red Bull for the title. I think coming out of preseason testing, they looked better than Mercedes. They were very quick. They were very reliable. They were getting a lot of laps in. I think both Charles and Carlos looked fast and looked comfortable in the car. So they're, you know, and they had said that they had thrown a ton of energy last year into the development of this car. They had very eyes on the prize about it. They knew they were only going to compete for so much last year, and they wanted to get back to really competing for titles. So I think they have a shot. I'll say this. I wouldn't be surprised if either of their drivers or they as a team are actually the champion at the end of the season. That wouldn't shock me. I think it's not likely, but I wouldn't be like, oh my God, where did that come from? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, they've got such a nice mix. Like, Leclerc seems to me to be like a championship quality winning driver, and Sainz at the very least, I think he's a good driver and super reliable. Like, that guy always finishes. He's not getting in scraps with anybody, really, and he's going to generally perform pretty well. Like, he was ahead of Leclerc going into the summer break last year. Leclerc turned it on after he had some DNFs in the first half of the season, but once he started bringing the car home, that's when Ferrari really took off. So I think they just got two really good drivers, and like you're saying, the car's looked all right so far.
I do think Leclerc is probably the more likely to win the title, in the sense that I do think he's the superior driver. I think he can hook it up in more parts, you know, superior racecraft, superior on Saturday. It's his risk tolerance, or it's the DNFs. It's the fact that he's willing to go for gaps or push the envelope. If he can just kind of fine tune that risk tolerance and get a little bit more lucky just a couple of times and finish a few races where his appetite to push the envelope panned out rather than backfired, he has a great chance at finishing right towards the top of the standings. Carlos, he finished fifth in the driver's standings last year. So you can't, if the car is meaningfully better, you can't write him off as a title contender. You know, I just have yet to, you know, to me, I feel like he's just slightly behind the Verstappen, Leclerc quality of driver. So we'll see, though. At the same time, you know, maybe Carlos was ready to take the leap. He did all of that in his first season in a Ferrari, which a lot of guys, as we saw, Ricardo, Perez, they really struggled in their first year. So maybe he's going to take an even bigger leap.
Yeah, maybe he's, in NBA parlance, maybe he's like a floor raiser. Like, he's always going to be good. He's always going to be good out there. And I would say Ferrari, the most handsome F1 team.
I think that's right.
Personal preference, right there.
My wife is thrilled when the Drive to Survive episode comes around.
Yeah. Next on the list, McLaren, the papaya guys, Lando Norris and Danny Ric coming back. They were third in 2020, dropped to fourth last year. The biggest question I have with this team is always, who's the number one? Because to me, it should be Norris. He's been there longer. To me, he's better than Ricardo is, but Ricardo has a little bit more of a rep, and he's got some race wins in his pocket, which Norris does not have.
Including one last year, which has got to be one of the more surprising outcomes of the season, that if anybody of that duo won a race, it was Danny. I think that they go in with a true co-driver attitude. I think they're very team-oriented. I think that's a team that does pride itself on where it finishes in the driver standings. I feel like you see that both in Drive to Survive, but you actually see it throughout the season with Zach Brown's commentary. They probably talk more about their position in the driver standings than almost any other CEO or team principal. He brings it up a lot. So I feel like they have a very team-oriented attitude. If one of them excels and you find it where one of them is actually vying for the title, you know, that could change that attitude over the course of the season. But in the beginning, I think they'll probably treat them equally and take it race by race in terms of, you know, who's being favored strategically.
So. Is that the top four you think this year? Red Bull, Mercedes, Ferrari, McLaren in some sort of order?
That is the most likely outcome. I mean, I think the one thing I'll say is that, And I don't think anything in testing necessarily makes me doubt that. You know, I think AlphaTauri, I think Aston Martin, I think some of these other teams, Alpine for sure, could jump up, and Nick, maybe McLaren. McLaren seems the most vulnerable to me there. I don't know that they've nailed it quite to the degree that, or they made the leap that they had hoped to make, where they thought, okay, new regs, new chance, you know, to get back to the very top. I don't know if they pulled it off in the offseason or in the development over the last year. So it makes them a little bit vulnerable, but that's the, you know, the smart bet is that's the top four.
All right. Our next three, I'm putting all of these together, Graydon, because these all seem like the same team to me. They all start with A. Mm-hmm. They've all got the same lineups as last season, and it feels like they're always battling for like the last few points that are on the grid. We've got Alpine, mm-hmm. who are bringing back Fernando Alonso and Esteban Ocon. We've got AlphaTauri, who have Pierre Gasly and Yuki Tsunoda. And we've got Aston Martin Racing with Sebastian Vettel and Lance Stroll. How are you ranking those teams right there? I mean, the triple A's, if you will. Alpine, AlphaTauri, and Aston Martin.
Maybe in the order you just named them. I'm very bullish on what Alonso can do this year. He seemed to improve a lot over the course of last season as he figured out the car, and I think he did show that he still got it. That being said, my favorite lineup out there is AlphaTauri. Mm-hmm. I think Pierre Gasly is a supreme talent, and a better car could probably vie for a title. I think he is that good. And I think Yuki could make a leap this year. He was having a good season. He had a very up and down season where I feel like he did very well, or like the car never made it across the finish line. Yeah. So as long as he can kind of smooth that out, they could be very competitive, and that could easily be the team that ends up in fourth, ahead of McLaren, ahead of Alpine. But that's the one I'm most excited to watch. I think they're the I think Vettel is declining, and I think Stroll has a ceiling as a driver. I'm probably least bullish on Aston Martin.
Yeah, that was a disappointing season for Aston Martin last year. You know, they had their pink Mercedes during the 2020 season. It looked great. The rake regulations changed. It affected Mercedes and Aston Martin the most, for sure. But Mercedes was able to figure it out, whereas Aston Martin was not. Yeah, I'm excited for AlphaTauri as well. I like Gasly. And I also saw that Yuki Tsunoda, his big change for this season, he's not ordering Uber Eats anymore.
Oh,
he said he was ordering Uber Eats for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Wow, that's too much Uber Eats.
That's too much Uber Eats. He said that's way too much. He's like, Franz Yost, I think, is their team principal.
Yeah.
Right? And he's like, well, I saw that guy. He's 60 years old, and he doesn't order Uber Eats. He's got a ton of energy, so I'm going to stop ordering Uber Eats, which I think was a hilarious thing.
I know he loves the food. He does talk about food. Yeah. Like, last year, when he moved to Italy to, like, try to focus on the team more, they were like, what's the best part about it? He's like, oh, it's the food. I'm eating food. Like, he talks about – he's definitely my hungry boy. So it's like but that's too much Uber Eats, man. Even
that's too much.
If you're like an F1 driver, you're well compensated. You can't afford to order that much Uber Eats, but –
you also got to be, I imagine, if you're an F1 driver and you order and like you just see them with your order in the car and you're like, how is this taking so long?
Yeah.
Hurry up.
Wait, but you're supposed to be eating. You're supposed to be like trip. There's like so much sodium in like restaurant food. You see other guys like Carlos Sainz is like posting pictures of his food. It's like chicken and broccoli. Yeah. It's the most boring meals of all time I've ever seen. You shouldn't be eating that much takeout, period.
No, it's like Derek Rose, I remember, was like, he had like a Skittles machine in his house, and like, just, he's like, oh yeah, well, now that I'm not 25 anymore, I have to start eating decent food. So I guess that proves that these guys are super athletes as well.
I guess
you gotta watch what you're eating.
I guess that's what Yuki Tsunoda ordering Uber Eats this time of day definitively proves, that F1 drivers are super athletes.
Yeah, we shall see what they do. Alpine, AlphaTauri, Aston Martin, in some sort of order there. Alpine had a cool season last year. Alonso was a surprising veteran, and Ocon got that race win. Pretty cool stuff.
That was exciting.
Yep. Down the back markers. We're talking about Williams. They finished eighth in the Constructors' Championship last year. George Russell obviously went to Mercedes. So their driver lineup this year, Nicholas Latifi is back. And Alexander Albon, he's back, baby.
Welcome back.
Give him a red shirt because he's back. Is Williams heading the right way? George Russell was saying a lot of that. I wish this were my first season at Williams. You know, they scored more points last season than 19, 20, and 21 combined. But it hasn't looked good early.
It hasn't looked good early. Testing didn't look good. I think there was a lot of enthusiasm coming out of last season. I think people felt decent about the driver lineup. I know that Albon's probably not a top-tier guy, but bringing in a guy who has actual F1 experience as opposed to a true rookie, felt like maybe they could put it together, but I don't know. I didn't feel good after seeing them in testing. It doesn't feel like they're making the leap back up into the midfield. It certainly doesn't feel like they'll be out there competing with the AlphaTauris and the Alpines, which should have probably been the goal. Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, and I just don't see that. Of course, I will say it's not the gap it used to be. It's not like, okay, preseason testing, they're a second and a half behind the ninth team. They're close. They will be in the point some. Races will swing their way. I think there is a world where they're like back at the very bottom, like 9-10 again, which is a shame because I did want to see them improve, but.
Yeah, and they had a better last year, and obviously they had a change in leadership.
Yeah, Yost also.
Yeah, Yost Capito, that guy's
a character. Yeah, he's a character.
He was awesome.
He's a character, for sure. I like him a lot, actually. Yeah. I think he's cool, and his episode of Beyond the Grid, like the long-form interview with him, F1's podcast, is great. Super interesting. Hearing him talk about his experience in rally is super interesting. But I don't know. It just doesn't. This is just very competitive. You can even do a great job as a team principal, a great job with the car, and it's just not enough. So,
what's the scouting report on Albon? Because last we saw him, you know, he was with Red Bull, had some skirmishes with Lewis Hamilton, if I'm not mistaken, and then eventually got sent down to the lower team.
Yeah,
Toro Rosso back then.
This has got to be something where I think the thing that I'm really looking for from Albon is not it. Is not the driving ability, it's the yips. It's the psychological stuff. He seemed to get really shook. He had a few races where he was right there in it, fighting for a podium, fighting for a win. Things went awry. And those having the rug pulled out from under him seemed to really shake his confidence. At times, he made comment. I mean, a very, you know, infamous comment about how hard the other guys race him. He seemed kind of shook because people were doing really aggressive overtakes. And that's not the kind of attitude that you want a driver to have.
Why are all these guys passing?
Yeah, like to be a little bit taken aback at like how competitive the other guys are. Yeah, totally. Like that definitely didn't look good. I think that didn't I think that's what you're hoping for is just like maybe a little bit older, a little bit more confident. And hopefully in a situation where there's a little bit less pressure and therefore beating his teammate on Saturday, getting in the points, these are all wins. Those are things you can be proud of and kind of just building back into the sport a little bit.
All right, couple more teams. Our only all-new team is Alfa Romeo, finished ninth in the Constructors last year. They've got Valtteri Bottas as their number one driver and Guan Yu Zhou, the first Chinese driver at the Formula One level. Any idea what to expect from this team?
This has got to be one of the bigger wild cards out there. I don't think they're going to excel, but it's definitely a weird lineup, especially for a team that for quite a long time was perceived as just a feeder team for the Ferrari program. You know, the relationship isn't as tight, but they were basically the AlphaTauri, you know, to Ferrari's, you know, Red Bull, and they were. But neither of these guys are Ferrari guys. Bottas and Guan Yu aren't, right? So it's kind of like, what's this lineup? Where is it coming from? Why was this the strategic decision at the top is a little bit unclear to me. And certainly, you know, I will say that Bottas got a pretty detailed look at what both Williams and Alfa were planning when they were courting him, and he went with Alfa. He said, I think these guys are the more promising team. My understanding is he basically had his choice between the two. And he was like, I'm going to Alpha. Part of that was also about guaranteed money, I think, which was always a sore spot for him with Mercedes.
Sure.
So, and Alpha was willing to commit. But I don't know.
Seems significant to me, considering he has previous history with Williams. And I mean, honestly, even if it comes down to money, you would rather be with the team that's spending more money in a sport that's driven by money.
Totally, yeah, totally. So. Last year, I was shocked to see him make this decision. I would have bet a ton of money that he would end up back at Williams. So this definitely was a surprise lineup across the board, especially because also there's very talented Ferrari Academy driver guys sitting without a seat right now who you thought might have Guan Yu Zhou's seat. So I think this is a peculiar group. It's really tough to tell how these guys, but I think they're in this. We've got them in the right spot, which is somewhere in this bottom three. Yeah.
Our final back marker, the Haas Racing team. They've got Mick Schumacher back, and they just replaced Nikita Mazepin with Kevin Magnussen.
An upgrade.
So the question for Haas is, are they going to at least compete for ninth place this year? It was like a blowout last year. They weren't even close.
Hot take, I think they could compete for sixth place.
I think
they could be back in the midfield. I think the car looks good. I'll tell you right now, of these back markers, the Haas car looked the best of any of the back marker cars, for sure. You know, I think that final day of testing, in Bahrain, I think Mick Schumacher was the second fastest on track behind only Max Verstappen. So the car looks good. Is it a world beater? Are they going to be the very top of the standings? No, of course not. But I think they could be back in the points, be competitive. I don't think it's going to be a joke like last year where it's about which of them is getting 19th and which of them is getting 20th is the question, you know, which really it was. Like, I mean, they really were only not getting that if something went wrong for somebody else. You know, they were. So it's – that won't be the case this year. It will be interesting to see how Mick performs. If the car is better, can he really – you know, scrap in the midfield. So hard to assess his talent in such a poor car.
People think he's a good driver, though, right?
People do. He won the F2 championship. It's not just a name, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he won the F2 championship. He had moments last year where there's great. He looked great on track.
Yeah.
He was easily outperforming Mazepin, although I don't know that that's something to write
home about. Well,
they
had different cars, you know.
They had different cars.
That was the problem. They gave Mazepin the way slower car that spins a lot.
They gave him the big, the bad car. I know. They had the big car and the bad car, and they were like, yeah, you get the one that that spins into the wall.
We know your dad's paying for all this. We're giving you the worst car, though.
Yeah. So that's, and that, so that's hard to overcome, having the bad car of the two, but I do think that he
but I do think that
Hopefully he does well, and then Mag is a is awesome, really competitive, really aggressive driver. You know, has spent a bunch of, had been in F1 for a bunch of seasons, so I think he brings a lot of stability and knowledge and kind of mid season developmental knowledge back to the team. That's a tough thing about having a two rookie lineup, is that there is a really powerful feedback loop with the driver and their ability to articulate what's going on, what they need changed, how to evolve the car, you know, with, you know, what they're experiencing on track is something that rookies have a really hard time articulating. They just don't always know what they're experiencing. Mag will be able to do that. You need to improve this. You need to improve that. That'll make us faster in slow corners, fast corners, whatever. And that'll help them a lot over the course of the season as well.
All right. There's your 20 drivers heading into the 2022 season. Just going to throw this one at you, Graydon. Feel free to just rattle these off. Who do you think are the top five drivers in Formula One right now? Like, you know, if it were like Formula Two, we've all got the same car. Who are the top five that, you know, got the skills to
the
pay the bills?
Okay, yeah. I'm gonna. This isn't a hot take, but I bet you no one's expecting me to say this. But number one, I am gonna say Lewis Hamilton.
Still,
I think Lewis Hamilton is a god. Basically, I mean, he is out of control. What he can do, it's. Max Verstappen's my number two, and I get on pure pace, one lap to hook it up. Maybe the answer is Max, but if you talk about over the course of a race, the defending, the overtaking, the tire management, I think, you know, Lewis puts it together in a way that almost nobody else does. And that's not even that hot of a take if Latifi doesn't spin into a wall with, you know, 6-7 laps left last year. He wins the title again, and I think countless people are saying what I just said.
Sure.
You know, so
Oh yeah, I mean, if Hamilton wins the championship last year, people are maybe talking about that as his best championship ever, considering the comeback over the course of the second half of the season. I mean, those are an easy one too for Verstappen and Hamilton,
so
either way.
I do think, you know, for me, I'm tempted to say Leclerc at three. I think Leclerc is a really exceptional talent. I think what you see, what he does on Saturdays, you know, putting it on pole multiple times in that Ferrari, that is real pace. Man, that car was not as fast as some of the other cars on track. It probably was the fourth fastest car, you know, last year on pure pace, and he was still, you know, putting it on pole, you know. Could have won Monaco and almost won the British Grand Prix. A lot happened to almost enable that. But I think that, you know, so I think that's really impressive. Norris is an elite talent, a truly elite talent. I think a guy who absolutely can compete for titles. And then number five?
That's the tricky one for me, because I had Leclerc and Norris as well. True. I hope my boy Lando gets a W this year. But the fifth spot's hard to figure out. Like, Alonso was impressive last year. Sainz was impressive last year. Russell obviously has the talent, just hasn't had the car.
Russell's an interesting answer there. Again, I don't think you can say – I think Gasly's in the conversation. Gasly is still, I think, shaking off the burden of what you know, what a difficult time he had in the Red Bull. But the truth is, since he's been back at AlphaTauri, he's crushed it.
He's been great.
He's been excellent. As good. Probably the guy who I think has overperformed compared to the car more than any other driver on the grid, probably, which to me is always a great barometer of true talent. Like, where do you think the median for the car is, and then how far ahead is that guy? And you might say that over the last couple of seasons, Pierre is the guy who's furthest ahead in that regard. So, you know, I don't know, you know, any of those guys are a good answer, but I don't think you can throw him out.
All right, let us know in the comments who you think the top five drivers in the sport are right now. We'll check those out a little bit later. But we've also got some car stuff happening this season. FIA updated the regulations for this year in an effort to basically make overtaking a little bit easier, make things more exciting.
Correct.
From what I can tell, Graydon, the biggest changes are a new ground effect aerodynamic floor, new front and rear wings, the shapes of them, the correct. Side pods are different, and they got bigger tires.
Correct. All correct.
18 inches. I would have gone 20s, yeah, 22, yeah, maybe. Rims. Spinning
yeah, spinners,
rims.
Yeah, I would have put spinners
slows you down.
On that. Yeah, but maybe some lights under the...
Yeah. What's going to have the biggest effect here?
I mean, the ground effect, you know, is the real, you know, huge change here, right? To shift the vast majority of the aerodynamic kind of, you know, the downforce being created to underneath the car from above, and hopefully that will, you know, mitigate the effects of dirty air, maybe even eventually reduce the need for DRS and allow them to get rid of that entirely because overtaking will be more plausible without it. That's on the kind of product roadmap or the regulatory roadmap. Their hope is to do away with DRS. So I think that's the big one. And, you know, we're seeing teams still figuring it out. You're seeing, you know, there's some porpoising out there.
There's some porpoising.
There's a little bit of porpoising.
I hope they never fix it.
There's a part of me that wishes the porpoising was a bigger problem. It was like nobody could figure out how to not.
Like, sorry, our cars just swim now.
Yeah, they're bouncing around. But I think that good name for it, by the way. Like, why porpoising as opposed to like dolphining? Lots of like things like duck in and out
things,
of the water.
Yeah.
But like, why did you go with the porpoise in particular?
Beautiful animal.
It is a beautiful
animal. Creature.
It is.
But it is a problem. It seems like it would be the most annoying possible thing that could happen when you're going 220 miles an hour, bouncing up and down all the time.
Especially because the suspension is actually stiffer this year as well, because they don't want it to impact the ground effect in the Venturi tunnels underneath the car is actively. So they're feeling that up and down a lot as they're coming down. They're feeling it a lot. So I think it must be weird. But that's the biggest ticket item. We'll see how well it pans out. We'll see what sort of pace they can get out of these cars. Of course, you have the simplified front wings and rear wings. The look of them is very different. The side pods for me are the other thing where I don't know if I'd call them the most important element. The ground effect, I would argue, is the most important element. But they're the most fascinating in the sense that, at least in all of my time watching F1, I've never seen greater, like, more differentiation in how people approached it. They all look really, really different. Some are, like, really long and wide. Some are really boxy. Mercedes are barely existent.
Yeah.
You know, they're like that. These are radically different design solutions, which is normally not what you see. You see like people kind of iterating towards an optimal state, you know. So I think that's fascinating, and it'll be interesting to see whether that really breaks up the grid and some people just did the wrong thing, or whether oppositely, there were multiple ways to skin this cat and actually have really radically different design solutions that are very competitive. I think that's also a very cool, fascinating outcome.
Yeah, so. I guess it's going to be interesting to see if these, like, actually, if it makes things more stratified where you're like, whoops, we went the wrong way and now we're porpoising all the time. We don't have a chance here. Or, like you're saying, maybe there are several different ways to do this and now the changes are actually going to work and we're going to have a little bit more parity.
Regulatory changes, big regulatory changes, do tend to usher in like eras of dominance or like shifts in the grid. You know, Mercedes dominance over the last several years is totally in the wake of the move to the hybrid engine and them nailing that and then nailing the rest of the setup in relationship to that. So I think that, and that set them up for years of excellence. So we'll see if somebody else can nail it to that degree.
Last little bit of news that seems important to me. Michael Massey, the former F1 race director for the last three seasons, has been replaced after the way last year ended. Basically, F1 also amended the safety car rule that caused a bunch of drama last season. I wonder if those things went hand in hand. Hmm. What's the impact of changing a race director? They're going with two, actually, now, Eduardo Freitas and Niels Wittich, yeah, who will be alternating, I think.
And then my understanding is there also will be a little bit more like off-site support for them as okay. well. I think that was the perception. The overwhelming perception was, I think the institutional take here was, Massey made a mistake. It really probably was not entirely his fault from the stand of the FIA in the sense that he didn't have the resources he needed. So we need to provide this person with more resources. But the truth is, this bridge is so intensely burned, he cannot be the guy anymore because these teams are not willing to work with him. I mean, I think Red Bull was literally the only team that didn't support replacing Massey.
Okay,
I think he did a great job. He's the best guy we've ever had. Yeah, I think they I don't know exactly how that's, did they like ask them or was there a vote? I'm not clear on that, but I had read that like basically behind closed doors, Christian Horner was the only guy who wanted to keep him.
That's good. Why do they do it so late, though? It does seem very late, like late in the game to me to be changing a major figure in the sport.
That's a good question. I don't know why they would wait around to do it. I guess there was a lot of hemming and hawing. I think at the end of the day, it was they too close to the event itself, to the final race. They didn't want to admit any fault.
Sure.
I think they were trying to hold a hard line and say we did everything correctly, and then with enough distance be like, oh, but independent of that, we're making a change. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? I think
we spent the whole offseason researching this.
Yeah, totally. I think that's what they're attempting to, you know, split the difference between. I don't think anybody's really buying that, but, you know, you give it a shot.
All right. Well, that's all for our drivers, our cars, our directors. Got to take a quick break here, but when we get back, we're going to make some predictions for the 2022 Ooh. Season. Stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Boys are back. No red shirts, but we're still here. Talking about engine freezes over the break. You don't want to have a bad power unit. Shout out to the Slipstream team for telling me about that. Engine freezes. Had to get educated.
It is going to be a complicating factor. As we were talking about during the break, that's my belief that the secret reason you saw Bottas have to do so many engine changes last year and then be so willing to absorb those penalties is because Mercedes was really focused on engine development in the lead up to this engine freeze. I don't know if I've actually ever seen that confirmed in like the press, but I would speculate that that's what they were doing, is they were throwing him under the bus in order to make sure that they were able to move the engine far enough forward in the lead up to this.
Oh, I can't wait till he writes a tell-all book. Yeah. Then we'll finally get to the bottom of this. drama.
I don't know. What is it? What is that? I would be interested in a Botas Still-All book.
Yeah, sure. Totally.
Very dry, very short, economically written. Like a lot of the short declarative sentences.
All right. F1 does start for real this Friday. There's already been some action on the track, however, thanks to preseason testing, like you mentioned, in Barcelona and Bahrain. Are you a sicko? Are you watching these preseason tests?
I watched a little bit of them. I'm not a true sicko in the sense that I don't have them on for like all day just on a monitor. I'm following the times, seeing how they're doing. I'm checking in each day. But let's be real. The preseason testing is not super engaging.
I'm glad to hear you say it. I have a hard time like getting excited to watch preseason basketball.
Oh my god.
Racing is a tough ask, though. I did see some pretty like wild paint jobs.
I remember
going out for testing,
getting into like a big argument on his site. Like I forget who we were with, but Zach Lowe and I were defending the idea that like watching preseason basketball in lieu of watching postseason baseball is actually insane. I don't even like baseball that much, but like postseason baseball is inarguably better than preseason basketball. Like and a bunch of other people thought that was ridiculous because it's basketball, and I was like, I don't know, man. I mean, this is not good.
Yeah, so. We talked about it a little earlier. You said you've been following the times, and obviously there's a lot of news out there regarding testing. Is there a team or a driver that's impressed you or surprised you?
Well, we mentioned it earlier, but I'm really impressed with Mick Schumacher on that last day. You know, he, I thought, looked great. You know, the Haas car generally looks like it has taken a step forward, and the huge sacrifices they made last year were worth it. Ferrari has got to be the standout one, where a lot of pressure coming in, a lot of hype. You know, people had said, oh, I think Ferrari's doing a good job. You know, I think they can compete again for titles. That was the expectation coming into preseason testing. It appears as if they've delivered and they have a car that can at least put one of their guys back on the top step. We'll see about the titles. So those are the two where they, you know, on both kind of the low end and the high end, mm-hmm. the ones that have got to be the winners of preseason testing, with the caveat that like nobody's shocked that like the Red Bull looks really
right,
good.
Of course,
you know, like that. Yeah,
so, yeah, they won last year, still look good, and the question, of course, is Mercedes sandbagging? It always comes up to the sandbagging talk during preseason.
It does. I cannot believe how it's what an annual tradition, a tradition unlike any other. year, saying the car sucks, and then it's like, oh, JK, we've all lost by like 20 seconds.
I will say it is weird that one of their solutions to porpoising was just like, just tie it down, basically. You know, like put a bungee cord around it, and it'll hold it down, and it'll be fine. There's got to be something more to that.
Yeah, it's got to be more. I don't know. The porpoising thing is a really complicated problem, a really complicated engineering problem. We'll see how much people really solve it versus how much
deal
it bleeds
it.
Into the season. You know, I also think other changes. The thing is, it might come and go because you'll see people continue to evolve parts of the car and might have unexpected, you know, these porpoises might unexpectedly rear their head throughout the season.
Uh-oh. You mean like a little... That's not a sound.
Like
that a,
yeah, what
makes.
Do they do? That's like
I guess they make a dolphin sound.
Do they go like? Yeah, what's a porpoise make? Yeah, I don't know.
Let us know. Let us know in the comments if you ever heard a porpoise. If you've ever heard a porpoise, let us know what they sound like, please. You mentioned the 2022 season. That's what we're talking about. So let's make some predictions about it. First one I got for you, Graydon. Which team is going to make the biggest jump in the standings?
I'm going to go with Haas.
I'm with you.
I'm going to go with Haas. I think
the
they
Haas
can
boys.
Go two, three, you know, up. I think, you know, the other ones, I don't think anybody's in position to make a bigger leap than they will. You know, in the sense that even if Ferrari wins the title, they were third last year. You know, it's not, they've only moved up so many places. That's the porpoise? It sounds just like a
dolphin. Well, I think that's a dolphin.
Okay, that's a... Yeah.
So hard to tell.
That's gotta be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Porpoise, and that's just a sick
the Porpoise rock band. Yeah, that's their band.
Yeah, Haas is going to score some points this year. They were competitive in the recent past, you know, like
100%
competitive in the like we're going to score some points and not be
Haas is
trailing everybody.
Truly embarrassing backmarker is actually a comparatively recent phenomenon. Sure. That wasn't the case when they first came into the sport, and I do think they can be back on the bottom half of that midfield pack consistently, and you know, and I think they can. Yeah, they're my pick. So,
is there any sort of like concern with Haas about like being able to continue to field a team now that they don't have their fertilizer guy around?
They claim financially things are okay, and my understanding is that Ural Kali, which was the title sponsor that's now been pulled in the wake of all the various Russia sanctions, had already paid them a lot of the money. I don't know if they have to give it back, or can you even give it back? Like, you're not allowed wire money to people in Russia at the moment. It's like, I don't even know how you go about doing that. You know, so maybe they just pocket it and then are like, cool, we're out. And,
wow.
You know, but, or maybe they try to give it back. Apparently they're okay. I imagine if that rears its ugly head, it's not even this year. It's like next year they sure. have to take a step back because, you know, developmental investments got disrupted or something like that. We'll also see how quickly they can. They are no stranger to title sponsor drama. They yeah, have had the exactly craziest right. journey of weird title sponsors. So, you know.
Yeah, next question. This one's a tough one. Who's going to make the biggest drop in the standings? Like, maybe Alfa Romeo? Maybe yeah. Williams? I mean, Williams was eighth. Maybe they could fall to tenth if they don't have if their car's not doing it right. And Alfa Romeo, I guess they could be tenth. But
yeah,
to me, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. And then just from a team standpoint, yeah, it's probably Williams, honestly, sliding two back. Unless you see somebody like... Unless, like, McLaren's way off the mark.
Sure.
And ends up at the back of the midfield or something unexpectedly. You know, they're actually not that competitive against AlphaTauri and Alpine and the like. That I could see that happening. The other one here, lest we forget, I mean, this would really shock me, but the answer could be Mercedes.
Sure.
I mean, if Mercedes is not sandbagging and they really didn't nail the car design – and suddenly they're fourth in the championship or something. I mean, that's a huge slide. So,
well, I mean, even coming in third is a huge slide for them, right? Because, I mean, I don't know, at least for the past couple of seasons, it's been one and two are so far ahead of even three and four that, you know, you're playing in a different field, in a different game, basically. So, yeah, I guess it's going to be interesting to see, like, how much are you faking the funk here, Mercedes? You got two good drivers. You've had a ton of success, but new cars.
We're definitely there. You know, they're boy who cried wolfing us, right? Like at this point, nobody believes them, but I guess we'll see. We'll see on Sunday.
All right. Which driver do you think is going to be most successful on their new team? Probably a pretty easy pick here. George Russell moving to Mercedes, though. We'll see.
Yeah. Russell, I think, probably has the biggest leap in points. You know, like he's at the biggest jump there. Yeah. I mean, the answer is probably Russell, right? I guess it's like there's. I'm not that bullish on Guan Yu Zhou's not to knock him as a driver. I just think it's incredibly hard to be a rookie in the sport. I don't actually think Albon is going to be all that successful. You know, the sleeper here is K-Mag.
K-Mag. Is that his nickname?
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. I think, well, he's going to look the most impressive, I think, because Haas's car should probably be better.
Probably.
He's going to be better than Mazepin was last year.
By a country mile.
And you would think that he will help Mick Schumacher out, so they'll probably just get a little boost there with Schumacher being in his second year as well. So I feel like we're a little too big on Haas right now, to be quite honest.
You think we're a Haas? I'm revising my prediction. Haas wins the title. Say straight to the Schumacher, K-Mag, 1-2, Haas drivers and constructors. They clean up.
That would be.
It's not even close.
That would be
winning,
quite the
they're
season.
Winning races by 10, 20 seconds. It's like, yeah.
Who's taking home the most DNFs this year? I don't know if you take home a DNF or if you just leave it out there on the course.
It's a shame because Mazepin's the easy answer here if he's still in a seat. I hope it's not I hope it's not my short king Yuki, but it might be. Like, Yuki is kind of a mess out there sometimes.
He was a crash monster last year.
He's a bit of a crash. He's a bit crashy. I feel like I feel like the answer is Yuki, but I don't want it to be.
I think Albon will challenge for the DNF title as well.
That's actually a good answer.
A bit of an aggressive driver. Like we mentioned, he had the touch-ups with Hamilton not too long ago. And Williams' brakes were catching on fire during during preseason testing. I saw Nicholas Latifi was putting his own car's fire out with a fire extinguisher. That's kind of like when you're a driver and you don't like being passed and you get upset about it. You also don't want to be the driver who has to put your own car out when it's on fire.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, fair enough.
Behind the eight ball for Williams to start the season. Here's the big two questions, though. Who's going to be the constructors' champion? Who's going to be the driver's champion? Handle them separate or together if you want to.
I thought a lot about this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hot take. I mean, there's like what I really think and there's my hot take answer. I'm going to say Ferrari and Charles Leclerc. I'm going to go with my heart.
Yeah, there we go. I mean, you could easily pick Red Bull and Max Verstappen, but that's no fun. I mean,
it's no fun.
I even picked Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton last year. I'm doing it again. It's a bounce back year, but now it'll be fun because it's a bounce back year.
Nobody's picking Red Bull on this podcast.
It's hard, man. Honestly, Red Bull should probably be even better this year, don't you think? I mean, Perez,
probably.
Weird season for Perez. Like, I was expecting, like you were mentioning, Gasly is a guy who gets a lot more out of his car than it seems like he should. That, to me, was Perez before he got to Red Bull. So I thought he would hop into this elite car and be one of, like, the championship-contending drivers, which I think he finished fourth. Right. So he was. But it wasn't, like, instantly a perfect match there.
But he finished fourth, but, like, 25 points.
Yeah.
Or maybe not even ahead of, like, Carlos Sainz in fifth, which is, given the gap between those cars, that should have been much larger. You know, that's actually where I will say with this, you could see another split title where, you know, Max walks away with the driver's championship. He's so talented and he's in a great car. But if, let's say, Ferrari has a very competitive car or even the equivalent car to Red Bull, you know, are Leclerc and Sainz the better duo and do they bring home the constructor's title? I think that's plausible. I think that's plausible. Same thing with Merck. Mm-hmm. If Merck figures out the car and it's actually really good, it seems to me like there's multiple guys who could take the title, but actually a different team was better.
Yeah, to me it seems like Red Bull is a lock to finish in the top three. Of the teams out there, they're the most like, they're going to finish top three and be great. Top two, probably, to be quite honest.
If they're not top two, I'd be pretty shocked. Yeah. If they're not top two, it's only because, I mean, I guess this, what I'm about to say is obvious, but it's like, I think Mercedes and Ferrari, have wildly overachieved if somehow they knock Red Bull out of the top two. It's like, that's a huge outcome for both of those teams. A huge outcome.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is just that, like, Red Bull seems like, you know, they've had a lot of great seasons in a row. They finally got over the hump last year with Max winning. They're going to be good again. Whereas Mercedes, it seems like they're probably sandbagging. They've got good drivers. They've been great in the past. They'll probably be good as well. Hopefully they are sandbagging. And hopefully Ferrari's, like, preseason testing is legit and that they can actually compete as well, because having three teams go for the championship, that's better than having two teams go for the championship.
People forget, but even just back as recently as 2017, 2018, you know, that 16, 17, 18 era, even in 19, you know, Mercedes was always, like, pretty confidently winning the titles. They were normally not that threatened in the Constructors' Championship. But in actuality, Red Bull, Ferrari, and Mercedes all were regularly winning races.
Sure.
The team you saw on the top to win any given race was very, very competitive across those three teams, depending upon which, you know, the track favored their various, you know, car designs. And I think you could see a world where we're back in that, where it's actually, even if somebody emerges as the leader of the pack, actually any given race is very exciting. And there's a lot of the wide array of design directions we've seen with the cars, well, you know, leads to a lot of variance track to track. So
hopefully that's the case. You got our picks: Charles Leclerc and Ferrari, Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes. Homers. homers, homers, big time homer picks here, but leave yours down below in the comments. We want to hear who you got for the Constructors champion and the Drivers champion in the 2022 season. We're going to take one last break here. When we get back, we're going to Bahrain. We're staying here, but we will be talking about the Bahrain Grand Prix
in our minds.
Stick around.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And we're back. I'm messing with my monitors. This is what a dum-dum. What a dummy. So, anyways, this isn't just a season preview for the Formula One season. It's also race week, Graydon. Bahrain week. Grand Prix kicks things off this weekend. We got practice Friday, qualifying Saturday, then the real deal. Sunday morning, 10:55 a.m. Eastern.
That's a nice time. That's a nice time.
A.m. Eastern.
Here. In the Eastern time zone.
That's right. It'll be on ESPN, the big boy ESPN. We're not on ESPN2 for the race, So you know it's a big deal.
The worldwide leader.
Yeah, that's right. 22 races currently on the calendar, going until November with a lot of breaks in between. Got two races in the States this year, actually. They added that Miami one.
Yep.
I suppose they could add some more races to the calendar, but we shall see. Definitely starting in Bahrain. Last year's podium, Hamilton, Verstappen, Bottas there with Mercedes. If you remember this race, Verstappen overtook Hamilton lap 52, but it was outside track limits. Hamilton may or may not have forced him or tricked him to go outside of track limits. So then Max had to get the spot back. Hamilton takes the lead. He wins. Took all of one race for these two to get into a skirmish last year. I wonder if we'll see the same sort of fireworks this year. Lewis Hamilton has won in Bahrain in 2014, 2015, 19, 20, and 21. Do you care at all about historical records when the regulations have changed? Are we just throwing it out the window?
I think he likes the track and he excels there, but it's also, it's like, there's so many tracks where it's like, and Lewis Hamilton is one here this year, this year, this year, this year, you know, like, it's like, and it's like you need multiple hands to count them all. Like, so it's almost, he's such an anomaly in that regard. I don't know that it makes him the favorite going into this weekend, but, you know, I guess we'll see. I do think this is an interesting track because it's probably one of the ones where you see the biggest gap between practice and the race itself, because practice is during the day and then it goes into the evening, and track temperatures change a lot over the course of the day. That affects, I think, tire strategy a lot. There's a lot more X factors there. All the more interesting because the tires are new.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of data still to be collected on how they handle, how they degrade, you know, and what the optimal strategy is. This is always a tough track to nail the tire strategy. Even more so this year. So that's got to be...
Because of the temperature differences in
the air temperatures? Yeah, the temperature differences in the air and the track temperature. I think that's got to be that's the biggest factor, because I think only P2, like practice two, is the only one where they're running kind of close to, you know, race conditions.
Okay.
So it makes it a challenge to know, you know, you don't have the right data. So, and I think all the more so because these tires are pretty new.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. With the NBA, we always do after, you know, it kicks off on Tuesday night, two games, then they play like 100 on that Wednesday night.
Yeah.
We always do. It's only one game, but where we're overreacting to what happened in the very first thing of the season.
Loved overreact.
Does that happen for Formula One?
Oh, my God, yes.
I mean, I assume yes, but this year you got to be like, okay, so we got a completely new car. We don't know what's going on with the tires. We don't know what's going on with the porpoises. We don't know what sound a porpoise makes.
No.
Does it make a dolphin noise?
Does it even make a sound? Do you think it's like a cow thing? Like a
yeah. Brrr. So to me, it seems like it's going to be hard to overreact to this one unless somebody comes away, like completely blows out the field and you're like, uh-oh, that's the best car by far.
I could not disagree more. I think it is so easy to overreact to this one. It's a blank slate.
All right.
No matter who wins, you could say they're going to win every race. I think it's a perfect platform on which to say literally whatever the heck you want. Like, to just make it, to just go perfect, as extreme then. And crazy with your takes coming out of it as you want.
Well, maybe this is when the Haas March for the Championship starts, then.
Oh, I mean, that's what I'm saying. This is Mick. A Schumacher is crowned yet again.
If you had to make a pick for who wins this weekend, who you got?
Oh my God. I mean, I guess Max is sure. The smart pick. As the smart pick, but
Not me, Greg.
This has got to be as impossible. That question will get easier as the season goes on, but that's a tough question to answer from where we stand right now.
Well, it's going to be Carlos Sainz. I don't know if you know that.
I love that answer. I love that answer. It's right there.
Here's another one I need to know. Is Lando Norris getting a win this year?
I'd love to see it, although I feel like all episode I've kind of been dogging McLaren or a little bit bearish on them. So I don't know if I, you know, but the truth is he's got the talent, and I think you'll see enough variation, and actually the field is tight enough that the difference between the very top teams and the midfield teams is narrow enough that, yes, Norris can pull it off. I think he might need a little bit of help, but let's hope so, because he really deserves it. He really deserved it last year in Sochi. Speaking of which, I think you mentioned there are 22 races on the calendar. I think they intend to add a 23rd because they canceled Sochi and now there's 22, but I think they're going to replace it. So I do think in the end we'll get 23.
Just like Michael Jordan, just like LeBron James.
Yeah.
Just like Draymond Green.
And it looks like we might get a third next year. We might get a third American race or soon.
Where?
Las Vegas.
Woo!
That's what they're talking about.
Talk about managing your tire temps. That'll be a tough one.
I don't know if the pens to paper yet, but I think they're literally talking about setting it up where like the main straight is the strip. It would be like a road race in Las Vegas. I know, it'd be insane.
That'd be really cool.
It'd be insane, actually.
They're still going to have the guys standing on the corner. Hey, strip club, you want to go?
I guess.
Just yelling at the drivers as they go by.
I mean, why? That's part of the landscape.
Craziest thing one of those guys ever said to me, hey, you want some nipples on that beard? What? What?
What was your answer to that?
Yeah. But I gotta go record a summer league show. Maybe I'll see you later.
I'm trying to watch some preseason basketball here. I don't want to. Exactly.
But I think that does it. I think that does it for us. We talked about every driver. We talked about all the cars. We made some predictions. We looked at the race this weekend. I don't know what else.
I can't wait to go back and listen to this episode at the end of the season to realize like how off my predictions were, like just how wrong I was.
That's all right. That's how it is. Thanks so much to everybody who joined us today. Make sure you follow Graydon on Twitter at Mr. Gordian. It's the only way you're going to find out where the buffalo were in the 19th century.
It's incredible when you see that map to think they reached all the way down here to Atlanta. Buffalo herds naturally here in Atlanta.
Love to hear it. Incredible. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, basically wherever where there is social media. It's at No Dunks Inc. Subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/nodunks. Only $1 a month for the next 6 months. And I know they got F1 content coming around the bend. Also, send us some emails. Hit us up at nodunks@theathletic.com. Put no breaks in the subject. We're going to be doing this show a lot more this season, so your questions will be much appreciated, and you'll ask us some things that we never even thought about. You got anything, JD?
Nope, that's all I got, yeah. Just,
great.
That's it.
All right, make sure to tune back in to No Breaks next week. It's the only F1 podcast that plays you porpoise sounds. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Stay speedy, people. Vroom, vroom.
Meow.
Nice.